Episode 120 of the podcast. This week we're talking about training plans and the variety of ways that we can look at training plans. Is it a recipe or is it a flowchart? Find out this week. You're listening to the Creating Great Grooming Dogs podcast. I'm Chrissy Neumeyer-Smith. I'm a certified professional groomer, a certified behavior consultant for canines, a certified professional dog trainer, and the owner of Happy Critters in Nashua, New Hampshire. And this, my friends and colleagues, is the podcast where grooming and training meet. One of the most common things I see is when we have a dog that's having trouble on the grooming table, who's having a hard time. Again, the dogs are having a hard time, not giving us a hard time. Kind of a shift in mindset for some of us, right? But what I find is that really very often what we're doing is we're like, what do you do? This dog hates having his nails done. What do you do? What do I do? What do I do next? And we've talked before about observing and finding out all the details about that behavior because it gives us more information to go on. But let me tell you why. I think that often, especially people who aren't dog trainers, really even very, very dog savvy, you know, professionals who aren't trainers, we tend to think in terms of, I want that solution. And it's almost like we're looking for a recipe. Like, dog barks at mailman. Look it up in the index and table of contents. Oh, okay, yep, page 87. And page 87 is going to have this recipe on what exactly to do when dog barks at mailman. We're going to do step one, step two, step three, step four, right? And sometimes that works, right? Like, there are definitely some things out there that I could say, yeah, that seems like a good recipe. But, and here's the tricky part. Every dog is different, and every behavior problem that we're seeing is different. And we have to think about what motivates that dog, right? Not just what makes them happy, but what is the problem they're having with the process that we're doing. And especially when we're talking about handling and care, like grooming care and veterinary care, and this kind of up-close physical handling that a lot of dogs have trouble with, when we're talking about that, we really need to figure out which aspect of what we're doing is a problem. And I think that oftentimes, and I'm included in this, you're thinking, I'm trying to get the nails done. I'm having a hard time getting the nails done because of this dog's behavior. Therefore, the problem that we need to work on is nail trimming. Now, I know at least somebody is like, yeah, Chrissy, pretty obvious, right? However, all right, and here's where I want you to start thinking, what part of the nail trimming process was that dog having trouble with? Because we're just laser focused on what we are doing, and what we are doing is something we're supposed to be focused on. But for example, part of why I use the nail trim as an example, for so many dogs, in my experience, it's not the nail trimming. It's the holding for nail trimming. And ponder that for a minute. Like, right, are they like that for when I'm holding them? Like, different than just holding for scissoring or holding for clipper work. Like, but the way that we have to hold them and hold a toe individually to be able to trim it, is that the issue this dog is having? Because that would be a different solution, right? If we were looking in a dog training recipe book, right? Like, that might be a different solution than the dog that doesn't like the feeling of when the nail is snipped, right? Or perhaps you have a dog who is really comfortable with being held and being repositioned, and you can touch his feet all over, and it's just that little piece of when we snip that nail, which kind of means that that dog is further along in the training process. Probably doesn't feel that way at that time, but when you think about knowing why the problem is there is going to guide our solution mindset. Like, how do we help this dog learn to be calm, comfortable, and cooperative? So we need to be able to think about what exactly is happening so that then we can figure out what we want to try to encourage this dog to be good. And there might be a recipe, right? Like the step-by-step training process. But I want to present to you guys the idea that behavior change and the individuality of it, which is exciting, right? Like, come on, every dog's an individual. When we look at behavior change, it's less of a recipe and more of a flowchart. if this, then what happened, right? So for instance, I was talking at the Behavior Summit this weekend, and it was on one of my slides, a couple of my slides, but I kind of wanted to delve deeper and do this on the podcast too. But I want you to think about the behavior flow chart, right? Turn on dryer. Is dog calm, comfortable, and cooperative? Yes. Start drying, right? And always kind of circling back to each new step. Is dog calm, comfortable, and cooperative? Yes or no? And then move it on. If it's no, what happened? What did the dog do? Right? So now there are multiple options. What did the dog do? Did the dog bark? Did the dog try to bite the nozzle? Did the dog flatten to the bottom of the tub? Like, there are lots of things that a dog could have done, right? So now if you're thinking about a flow chart instead, like, ah, right, which one of those options, right? Because that's more specific. And then from there, what kind of things could you do to work on that, right? So for instance, it might be I turn off the dryer for a moment, help this dog calm down again, reassess what I'm going to do. It might be turning the dryer down. It might be trying a happy hoodie. It might be a variety of things, but every dog is an individual. So it's not like it's a recipe where you can say, this is going to work on this dog. And what you do is you, dog freaks out when you turn on the dryer, you're just going to put a happy hoodie on him and he's going to be fine, right? I mean, I'm a fan of happy hoodies, but like, yeah, it's not necessarily that slam dunk for every dog, right? I mean, actually, I find that for a lot of dogs, it's comforting, but not necessarily a I'm fine now, okay? So when we think about what else is happening, right, and how many options we have. Now, that's where having an idea about, like, this recipe idea, like, is to have a lot of options. Now, I'm going to parallel that for groomers, because I want you to think about the kind of times when we have almost, like, our own flow chart. So, for instance, a dog comes in needing a bath. What do we automatically do? We're like, hey, let's look at the skin and coat condition. If the skin and coat look healthy, we're not going to reach for any of our medicated shampoos. Those are some of our options, right? So now we're like, okay, now what type of coat is it? What are our shampoo options? Because we don't have just one, right? We have multiple options. So when we start thinking about our own field of expertise, right? You're like, oh, right, I have multiple options. I'm going to base that on the coat type. I'm going to base that on the kind of condition the coat's in. I'm going to base that on the kind of trim that they want or a scent that they might want, right? There are lots of options and they're individual. So having a good idea of how many options there are, well, that's really exciting. So that's where you can start having almost like this toolbox filled with options. Right. So when we talk about, hey, what do you guys do when a dog does, or what do you try when the dog does whatever, right? Having a knowledge of a lot of options is really helpful. But ultimately, I want you to be thinking about, it's not going to be as simple as people said to try this, right? You know, again, on TV, you see stuff where it's like, just need to be a more powerful leader. You know, that's not how it works, right? Leadership alone isn't mean like, oh, and now I know how to hold still and that nail trimming is safe. So I want you to be thinking about, it's not so much a recipe, it's a flow chart. It's this dynamic thing and it's so exciting, all right? But I want you to think about, like, I need to know more details so that I can apply the right shampoo. So that I can apply the right conditioner. So that I don't accidentally use the shampoo or conditioner that the owner said they hated the smell of. Right? Think about that. And draw a parallel to our behavior problems. Because when we have these behavior problems crop up, and again, the dog is having a hard time, not giving us a hard time. So when we have these behavior problems crop up, and we start thinking, where is the problem occurring? What are my options? What have I tried before? You know, like, what do I think was going to help this guy? And if I do ask for help, what do I know? What have I observed? And really think about all those details. Because then if you get on, like, Facebook, right? If you get on Facebook and suddenly you're asking questions like, Hey, I have a dog that is usually pretty good for X, Y, Z, all these other things. But the moment that I reach for his tail, he tries to sit down. If I stand him up, he starts panting. He starts getting nervous. Like, we can then figure out more about what's going on, and you can get better quality ideas, because really we do need to know more about what's going on. Yeah, of course we do, because every dog is different. They're all individuals. So again, I kind of want to get away from this idea that like I need a step-by-step process. Those are important. And in the next part, we're going to talk about like step-by-step processes are great, but they need to be part of your toolbox and you need to assess if that's the right tool. If you're enjoying this podcast, please remember to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes and tell all of your friends. So back to, is it a recipe or a flow chart? So I think that what we do is we tend to look for easy solutions and we're like, okay, how hard could this be, right? Like somebody else has dealt with this. So how can I come up with a solution? What have you tried? And we want to latch on to that advice. Like, oh, cool. Somebody I know who's really, really good with dogs has done this and had success with it. And that's good to know. Yes, you stow that away and that becomes part of your toolbox. Okay. So I want you as groomers, you know, the groomers out there, I want you to think about your toolbox, right? Because when we have a dog who, let's say we have a dog who has a tangle, right? They're a little bit matted. Do we reach for just that we only have one brush, or do we have multiple brushes? I don't know about you, but I have like multiple brushes. There are a lot of options that I'm going to pick from. Okay. So if you think about like, oh, wait, I have something specific for that. But if you only had one brush, you're going to be disappointed sometimes. Your one brush might be the one brush for lots and lots of things, but it's never going to be the one brush for everything. Right. So when I want you to think about like we're filling a toolbox. So when I'm online and listening to people discussing how they're working on things, I'm like, ooh, that's a neat idea. File that, right? Like that becomes part of my toolbox. That might be something I try someday. Now, when we talk about a flow chart, what that means is we're looking at what the dog is doing and we're trying to get all of those details. We're trying to suss out all of those details so that we can better address the actual problem. Find out what really makes this dog tick. Okay. Now, when we do that, there's the dog training world has tried to come up with kind of best practices. And this is a loose guideline. It's this ever living kind of document that we're all trying to, you know, adapt to. But generally, the humane hierarchy is a good place to start. And what that is when you are faced with a training issue, start with these steps first and work your way down. And it's mostly so that we're all kind of thinking about what is least intrusive and minimally aversive, often referred to as LIMA. And how do we adapt that so that what we're doing is we're trying to come up with the kindest way to take care of any sort of a behavior problem? So the first part of the humane hierarchy, because people are like, oh, well, we have a training problem, so let's just jump right to, especially with dog grooming, vet care, cooperative care stuff, they're like, jump right to positive reinforcement or jump right to, you know, counter conditioning and desensitization. And those aren't even in the top two. Wow. Okay, so what is this humane hierarchy, you may ask, and I hope you do. So the humane hierarchy starts off with, is there a health reason for this dog to behave this way? Like, is this behavior part of this dog's health, this dog's physical body? And we need to think about that, especially when we're talking about the kind of care that happens in grooming and in vet offices and when owners are trying to do like handling on their dog's body, right? That's super important. And we also need to, even if it's a problem that's never going to go away, we need to know that it's there and that needs to be part of our training flow chart. We need to know, right? So that's the first step. What physical reason might this dog have for behaving this way? And sometimes, you know, so a classic example, like the dog that just won't stand up on the table, right? And non-groomers don't really understand why that's really hard for a groomer to do a trim on. Right? They're like, what? You just take clippers down a dog's leg. You just take clippers down an ear, right? They don't understand why standing on a table is something that we, to get a nice looking trim, we need the dog to be able to stand. Now, if a dog has a physical problem that's making it really hard for them to stand for a duration, that might be different than a dog who has a physical problem where they really cannot stand without support, right? We need to think about how can we adapt to this dog's physical need. So if we're running things through this lens of the humane hierarchy, and think about just sort of like this lens, like, yeah, here's some best practices, right? So if we're running through the lens, the first step is always, is there a physical reason? Is there a physical reason? You know, like the dog that doesn't want us brushing his face, does he have bad teeth? Does he have sore gums? Like, think about physical reasons first. And so when we have our little flow chart in our mind, instead of like, this dog hates it when I do his nails, right? That might be your chief complaint, right? Complains of dog doesn't like doing his nails, having a hard time with doing nails, right? But if we start going, all right, well, now I'm going to take a closer look at this behavior and how do I want to help fix it? So I'm going to find all of those observations, when, where, how, like what is happening, and then say, is there a physical reason why this dog is like this? Now, when does positive reinforcement come in, Chrissy? Not yet. Second step isn't that either. Second step is there something in the environment? Is there something happening around us for this dog to have trouble? And in the grooming setting, there are lots of things happening all at once. And that's where you really need to think about observing everything going on, because that dog might be having a hard time because they have a view of the window and they're watching people on a sidewalk, right? That dog might be having a hard time because they're in view of another dog who's barking and growling at them, right? There are lots of things in the environment that we can look at and go, all right, I would like dogs to be totally comfortable in our environment, and we can work toward that. But also, if there's some way that we can minimize something that they're struggling with, that can make our life a lot easier. So the humane hierarchy, like I said, is just sort of a framework that we start looking at, like, how can I address a behavior problem going through with the least intrusive, minimally aversive Lima. How can I do that and address this dog's need for training? Because they do need to learn how to let us groom them, right? That grooming care is going to have to happen in a dog's lifetime, throughout their lifetime. So they still will have grooming needs, even if maybe the groomer isn't doing it and the owner's doing it or the veterinarian's doing it. But that dog is going to have grooming needs its whole life. So if we think of a flow chart, that also helps remind us, like, yeah, that one thing, if it didn't work, what are my other options? Like, I have lots of other options. And what exactly was going on at the same time? And when did I last see calm, comfortable, cooperative? Like, is that 3 steps ago? Maybe I rushed. Right? Because I want you to be thinking, if calm, comfortable, cooperative is the goal, then we need to be thinking about when we're achieving it and trying to backtrack to it if we fall from the path. So flow charts, kind of neat. And recipes, kind of neat. But I think that we tend to rely on, I just want something step by step. And sometimes that will work for some dogs on some days. And maybe someone will have a step-by-step process that's really going to be tailored for your individual dog. But tell you what, we can tailor a really nice individual training plan for you if we know everything about what's going on. Know the whole thing. So it's not as simple as dog hates this. There's so much more going on, and behavior is individual. If you'd like more information, you can find me at chrissy@happycritters.net, happycrittersdogtraining.com, or you can join the Facebook group, Creating Great Grooming Dogs podcast, or the Facebook page, Creating Great Grooming Dogs. I really look forward to hearing from you.